Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Richard Tick Siegerblum. And Richard goes by Tick, T-I-C-K, and I'm sure I'm going to ask you how that nickname came about. And Richard's last name is spelled S-E-G-E-R-B-L-O-M. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Tick. How are you today?
Good.
Great. Tick, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Tick, what year were you born and where were you born?
1948 in Boulder City, Nevada.
Okay. What were your folks doing there in Boulder City?
Well, maybe a little bit complicated, but my mother, when she graduated from UNR, College of Reno, had gone to Boulder City to teach school.
Oh.
And I think this is probably around 38 or 39.
Okay.
And then my father followed her in 40 or 41. They got married. And then, in 41, before Pearl Harbor, he got a job at Panama Canal, working for being a photographer for the Canal Zone or for the military. I'm not sure who it was, but it was related. It was considered to be top worthy of not having to go in the military. So anyway, they moved to Panama. My sister was born there. Then after the war was over, they moved back to Boulder City. And I think he started out created a photography shop at that time.
Let me just go back a little bit here. So your mom and dad met in Reno?
Yes. I guess her family had a house like across the street from UNR or close to UNR. And my father, who was older, and was going to UNR, rented a room in their basement.
Okay. All right, so that's how they would have met then. And what were your mother's and father's names?
Genevieve Wines. Wines was their last name. And Clifford Sagerblum.
And did your dad go by Cliff?
Yes.
Okay. And did your mom go by Jean or Guinevere?
Jean, spelled G-E-N-E.
And Jean is typically, the G-E-N-E is typically the male spelling of Jean is. But for Guinevere, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I'm not sure when, as far as I know, everybody was always called her Jean or Jeannie. Her sister's called her Jeannie, but when she ran for office, we were concerned that people might think she was a man. So I can't remember what we did, but we did something to let people know.
Well,
maybe we thought, because back then women were not very popular in politicians, we thought we'd run her as Jean and people would think she was a man.
Oh, my.
That's what it was. We didn't use Gene Genevieve. We just used Gene Sagerman.
Huh. Oh, very cool. Well, I want to hear all about that. We're going to follow the timeline here. So when we get up there in the timeline, I'm going to want to know a little bit more about that story, of course. So Cliff met Jeannie there in Reno. Then she came out to teach, and that was before they were married. So was your dad getting a degree there at Reno?
He was 3 years older, and he'd been there for a long time. Never did graduate from UNR at that time. He graduated in 1960, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
But he went there on a football scholarship. He was from Los Angeles. He went there on a football scholarship, and, just I don't know what he did, but he didn't have any money, and so he would take a few courses and keep kicking around. But he majored in art.
Okay. All right. So when did he learn? Did he know photography back in the 30s then?
No, it was actually, this is another interesting story. I don't know if you heard it yet, but so he goes to Boulder City where my mother already is, and I can't remember for sure. She has an oral history, you can tell all this, but I think her brother, well, I'm not even sure. Yeah, there's a connection with the Bureau of Reclamation, who was, at that time, you know, was running ran the town and everything else.
Right.
They said, go to the Bureau of Reclamation to get a job. So he goes to the Bureau, and they say, what do you do? And he says, I'm an artist. And they say, well, that's kind of like being a photographer. Here's, and hand him a camera, and say, you're the photographer on the van.
My gosh. Huh. Then what did he do?
So then I think his primary thing was taking, like, famous photographers who would come to photograph the dam, taking them around. So he took Ansel Adams and a lot of very famous photographers at the time. He would show them the different places. And in the process, obviously, learned how to take pictures and the spots that were best to take pictures. So I don't know if you've seen, there's a picture of my mother overlooking, sitting on the edge of a cliff overlooking the dam that he took probably around 40 or 41. There's this famous picture of the spillways or the penstocks with the water shooting out. He took that when that happened.
At night or during the day? There's one at night, too.
I think it was, that one's day, because that has the people hanging. There's a little, they had a wire thing with a cage, and it went down, and there's, like, the Secretary of Interior, some famous people standing on that thing.
Right. There's a huge platform that was suspended by overhead cables that they had dropped down. Okay.
Yeah, and those were supposedly dignitaries that they were showing it up close to the penstocks.
Got it. And I've actually seen photos in the Bureau of Reclamation archives, and on the back there's a stamp with the people's names, and your dad's names are on some of those photos. So he clearly got good. They must have given him a pretty good camera.
Yeah, it was a 4x5, you know, like the Ansel Adams uses.
Okay.
That's what he always said. Really.
What were they called? There was a name. All the reporters used them. I'm spacing on the name right now. Okay. And so your older sister, her name is?
Robin.
Okay. And so do you remember any stories of the family in Panama before you were born?
Not much, frankly. I mean, there are paintings that he did and stuff with the photographs. I've seen them. And I remember my mother was like a secretary to I'm not sure if she worked in the newspaper or something there on the, they were in the, you know, wherever the military base is, the zone where the Americans lived.
Okay.
And I know I've seen, I think maybe even some film that he shot when they would go around and take pictures all around. But I don't know that much detail about what actually went down. I know they were there for, well, my sister was born in 44, so they must have been there for 6 or 7 years maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I think she may have been pregnant with me when they came back. I'm not positive.
So did your dad go through basic training?
No, it was strictly a civilian job, but it was deemed to be something that was so important that you wouldn't go to the, you'd have to go to the army.
Got it. And so that would be a civilian job. He would go in under that category, and then serve that way.
Yeah, and he went probably like in August of 41 or maybe even before that. But so I guess there's probably lots of rumblings about the war, and so I it may have been on his mind to go there for that reason. But
okay,
the war hadn't started yet.
Okay, but he married your mom in 41. Did they get married, and then he head to Panama?
Yeah, and I think that was actually, well, I'm not positive, but I think it was I'm not sure. It could have been, they could have married in 40 and then they got, then he went in 41, but I'm not sure of the exact, actually the 50th wedding anniversary would have been in 91. So yeah, they must've got married in, I think probably
41,
May of 41.
Yeah.
And then he went to Panama. I don't remember that part, but I remember the funny part was my mother trying to get down there to join him, and that, I guess she had to go to New York, and maybe there's a long story there. But
well, what's the long story?
I can't remember all the details, other than it was pretty unusual that she had to stay in New York City for several weeks or months or something.
Wow.
So I think she actually had a job in New York, but my sister may know a lot more of this stuff.
Okay, circuitous journey. Yeah. To get down to her husband down there in Panama. Wow, and then they were down there for 4 years at least, huh?
Yeah, because she was born there in 40. My sister was born there in 44.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure they didn't come back till 47 or 48.
And what's interesting here is that Boulder City impressed them enough, having seen some more of the world, Panama, and certainly your mom saw New York, that they wanted to move back to Boulder City.
Yeah, and you know, she has real deep roots in northern Nevada, so the fact that they like Boulder City, I mean, obviously that the climate or whatever, they fell in love with it.
Huh, okay. When your dad came back, did he get a job back with Reclamation again?
That part is not clear to me. I know that he went into partners with Bill Belknap somewhere in there, but I'm not sure if he worked for the Bureau for a while or just had his own photography business. I don't know if he knew Bill. I don't think he could have known Bill before he went to Panama, because I think Bill was, you know, working in the White House.
Right. During the war, Bill was the president's photographer.
Right.
Traveled all over the world.
Yeah, the stories he used to tell about going to Yalta and places like that for those big meetings is just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Do you remember him telling that story about going to Yalta? Because it fits the timeline. And Bill Belknap is going to be, that's Belknap for the transcribers. Bill is going to be a big part of this interview series. What do you remember him talking about his time in the service?
Not much. He was very modest, but I just remember talking about how, you know, he would go with and seeing Stalin and Churchill and photographing people. So we didn't get into too much detail, but at least I don't remember him, but I just remember him, you know, having been actually present, and of course the photographer is really present, at least when they let you in to shoot the pictures. So
right, right, and you don't want to mess that photo up, you know, because it's going to be historically important, and you know that.
And you know, it used to take weeks or months for the president to get there, so they had to go silent before you went there. So it was an amazing process.
Wow. So he'd just fall off the face of the earth and be part of the president's retinue, and then show back up again.
Yeah.
Wow.
But you know what's interesting, now that you say that, you know, I haven't even thought this through, but you know, Bill's son Buzz was born the same year as my sister's, 44. So he obviously knew Fran.
Right.
Before the war, I guess. I don't know how he would have met her at the South Rim during the war.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay, so what are your earliest recollections of growing up in Boulder City?
Very little, just, you know, I just remember We didn't have swimming pools in Boulder City, so you would go to the lake. That's where you swam. Learned to swim. It was as much of Iowa as you can imagine, just very white, very middle class. You know, most people worked for the government, or some they were tied to the government, so they weren't rich, but they weren't starving either. And from the outside, it's very idyllic. I'm sure there were lots of things going on that you didn't see, but very calm Las Vegas was, a long way away as far as we were concerned, so you didn't get there very often. And Vegas itself was so small, it wasn't like it is today.
Okay.
It was really just like a little Iowa town stuck in the middle of the desert.
And when you mentioned you learned to swim in the lake, that would be Lake Mead.
Right.
So that's the reservoir formed behind the Hoover Dam. And the Hoover Dam is what made Boulder City as the town where the workers stayed. And then once the dam was completed, people working at the dam and the people that were keeping the town going all lived there.
So it was a government town. I think, I'm not positive, I think in 56 or 58, the federal government turned us over so we were actually a private town at that point. But those first early years, it was actually totally run by the federal government.
Okay. And when, as you were growing up, when did it first hit you that there was a difference between Vegas and Boulder City? Because gambling was allowed in Vegas, but it wasn't in Boulder City.
Nor alcohol.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had two beer taverns, or maybe, two beer taverns, I think. And the one beer tavern had a big sign that says, free beer any day the sun doesn't shine. And I think a couple of times during my tenure there, they paid on that bet, but it wasn't very often.
So the beer taverns, were they like just outside of town, or were they in town?
No, they were right downtown.
Okay, so if alcohol wasn't allowed, how did that work out? Oh, you mean it wasn't sold?
Hard liquor or wine.
Oh, okay.
Beer was allowed in those taverns. You couldn't buy beer in the store, I don't think.
Okay.
But there was at Railroad Pass, which is, I'm not sure, a couple of miles just to the... on the way to Las Vegas, there was a liquor store. So if you wanted liquor, you just would drive out there and get it and come back.
I see.
But, I think when I actually would start to appreciate the difference between Boulder City and the rest of the state, we were always very proud that we didn't have gambling, we didn't have liquor. We were, this holier-than-thou place.
Oh, interesting. Huh. I would think people would kind of say, well, maybe we need to be like them, but on the contrary.
No, I think it was something we bragged about as Nevada was at that point, particularly nationwide, very irreputable.
Okay.
And we always held out like, we're not part of Nevada. We're the good guys.
Huh.
We don't have any brothels or gambling or alcohol.
Okay. And so when the federal government turned the city over to what would be a city hall, a city charter, that charter must have maintained some of those earlier principles of
It was all the same stuff initially. At some point they did allow alcohol, but I'm not even sure if they did that before I left town.
Okay.
And I think they still don't have gambling.
Okay. What do you remember of your earliest recollections of going to school? I mean, who were your friends in first grade?
That's a good question. But backing up a little bit, my mother created a preschool.
Oh.
And so I'm not sure if it was 3 and 4 year olds or just 4 year olds. I can't remember that. But anyway, we have pictures of all those. But anyway, So that's my first schooling was my mother was my teacher, and there were like 20 kids in her class, and those kids were, you know, were with me throughout until I graduated from high school, probably.
And did she set that up?
Sure she created that herself. Yeah.
And you guys came back to Boulder City from Panama. You weren't born yet. But did she start that? I'm assuming that your parents came back in 45?
I think 40, 47 or 48 even.
Oh, okay.
After the war for a while. And I think that was the big, and I can't remember what the reasoning was, but there was a reason why they came back, but they were thinking seriously about just staying in Panama.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Were there folks, Cliff and Jeannie's folks? Well, Jeannie's folks were in northern Nevada, and Cliff's folks would have been in L.A.
Right. They I'm not sure when they moved. They moved to Carlsbad, California. And it could have been around 48 or 50. But they were living in Wilmington, and then they went down there sometime around 1950. And then, so when I knew my father's parents, we always went to see them in Carlsbad. They had a really, like an acre there. And
oh, wow.
My grandfather built a house, and it wasn't fancy, but it was just really a mecca, because it was, my grandmother loved to garden, and so they had this huge garden out back. They had chickens, and they had beautiful flowers, and when we would visit, it was a real treat.
I was going to say that must have been, you know, when I think of Boulder City, I think of, you know, the Mojave Sonoran Desert interface, creosote bush, spaced every 10 feet, which if you grow up there seems like a forest, but for outsiders it's like, you know, 5% relative humidity, no grass growing anywhere except where people are going to water it next to their houses. Going to California must have been like going to another planet.
Well, not so much, because Boulder City, truthfully, you know, we're the Cadillac Desert. We invented using water in the desert when you shouldn't. So we had the huge big park there. Everybody had a beautiful lawn. I hate to think how much water we used, but it was, we were, and because we were designed by the government, everything was laid out, big streets. And,
lots of trees, water thirsty trees.
Yeah. So it wasn't, okay. You didn't think of yourself as in the desert.
Oh, interesting.
Which is unfortunate, because that mentality continued. So you think, well, we don't have to worry about saving any water. But
right. Huh. Before we leave your dad's parents, what else do you remember about them? Your grandmother loved the garden. She had chickens. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, they were both immigrants from Sweden.
Ah.
They had come separately. I think they met in Boston.
Huh.
And then came to L.A. My grandmother, the story goes, and I'm sure it's true, I'm not sure how the timing works, but she was a maid for is it Mary Pickford or the movie star?
Okay.
And then my grandfather worked on the Charlie Chaplin job.
Oh, wow.
But, I think his name was Mary Pickford. Anyway, that was the story we always heard growing up. I'm sure she had other jobs than that. And then at some point, I think they even had a restaurant maybe in Wilmington.
And so did they meet in the movie business there in L.A.?
No, they met in Boston.
Okay.
They came separately, and then they met in Boston. I assume they got married before they came to California, but then picked up and went to California.
Okay.
In Los Angeles, and that's... And just got typical jobs.
Wow. Why did they move to Carlsbad?
I think just land was cheap. It was on the ocean, or actually, not directly on the ocean, but there's a big, what do they call it, where the water comes in from the ocean.
Like a bay kind of thing?
Yeah, it was a bay. So they were overlooking the bay. And
nice.
I'm sure it was really gorgeous, the land they had there.
Mm.
A lot and everything. And so I'm sure it was just they could afford to buy something and build something there.
Oh, good for them. Huh. It must have been tough, though, for them, because, you know, Cliff and the grandkids were a ways away.
Yeah, they my brother, my father had two brothers, one of which had some kids in they lived in Long Beach, I think, or maybe Redondo Beach to start with.
Okay.
But they weren't too far. And then my
other
brother that I'm named after, Richard, he was in the Navy pilot, and so he was, you know, living in different places around the world.
Oh wow, okay.
He came back. I'm not sure. He came back probably in the 50s.
All right, so they weren't. You know, they had other kids closer, so it wasn't like it was a big hardship that you guys were far away.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Cool. And what about your mom's family?
So they're the ones that are fascinating. They her mother was a bell, and her father's a wines. And if you know anything about Northern Nevada, which you're going to hear a little bit about, but anyway, in Elko, and from Elko east is they basically reflect Salt Lake City. So they were Mormons at some level.
Okay.
Then the Bells who were in Winnemucca, and the Wineses was a well known family in the Elko area, and the Bells was a big family in Winnemucca, and the Bells were big Catholics. So
oh, wow,
the fact that her mother and father met and married was probably controversial as far as like the Hatfield and the McCoys coming mm-hmm. together.
Right.
But anyway, so her family actually, no, yeah, her family, she was born in Ruby Valley, which is just to the south of Elko. And her mother had come there, I think, to teach school, like a one-room schoolhouse. And that's how she met my grandfather, my mother's father.
Okay.
And then she had like five or six, four brothers and sisters. She was the baby. But they had kind of a, but if you go back and, so anyway, to follow up on this, so the Wines family in Ruby Valley go back, they were actually Pony Express riders.
Wow.
There was a station at the bottom of Ruby Valley. They go back into the 60s. And on the Bell side, they had a gold mine north of Winnemucca that we still own, although there's no identifiable gold there.
Mm-hmm.
And her father, her actually I guess her grandfather, owned. Anyway, he was a big shot. He was a legislator, and I think I'm not sure exactly how it fit together, but it sounds like he may not have owned the brothel, but he owned the building that the brothel was in. So
okay,
she would always talk about the woman would come over and bring cash to her father.
The rent, pay the rent. Yeah. Yeah. So is that Wines?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And how did they work out what word am I looking for? Sometimes people I interview, the Catholic will convert to be Mormon. Sometimes the couple will maintain their separate faiths. Were your parents or your grandparents, now we're talking about on your mother's side, were they religious enough? I mean, how did they sort that out, the Mormons and the Catholics?
You know, I think it's more historical because I never saw either side be religious.
Okay.
So, but I don't think my mother. Well, I shouldn't say my mother. I'm not sure how it fit together, but at some point they converted at least her grandmother, my grandmother, to became a Christian Scientist.
Oh.
And and this was probably either in the 20s, and I think part of it was because some of her kids had polio, but I'm not totally sure. But anyway, my mother was actually raised as a Christian Scientist to the extent that you could, that was an active religion back in the 20s.
Okay. And that makes me think of Fran Belknap. Were they Christian Scientists?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
So that's kind of how the Belknaps and the Sagerblums were so close.
Oh.
You know, Bill was there were probably 10 or 20 Christian Scientists in Boulder City, but we were four of them.
Okay. All right, that makes sense.
And Bill was not, he didn't convert during my early years, but probably by the time I was 10 or 12 is when he became a Christian Scientist, very active Christian Scientist.
Okay.
But I can't remember if Fran, I know she taught Sunday school, but I don't know if she was actually my Sunday school teacher or not. But
what do you remember about Fran?
Just the nicest woman in the world. Just unbelievably nice. We would hear stories about, you know, her growing up with the South Rim.
Right.
Not sure how I heard those stories. But the one thing I remember that's really stuck with me is they would have somebody come from the Hopi village and stay with them in the summer. And the one that I recall by name, and I'm drawing a blank on his name, but his father was a very famous Hopi artist. And, Kabote, Fred Kabote.
Okay.
And then the son who came over there, I can't think of his name now, but he was an artist, and he actually came, and I met him after I moved back to here, probably in the 80s, or maybe around 90 or mid-90s. Anyway, I met him, and then we kind of struck up a friendship again, and then so I bought some prints from him, and then I tried to reach out to him, and he had died probably around 2000 or so. 2000, anyway, just very, died very young.
Too young, yeah, yeah. So you remember your mom was teaching kindergarten?
No, preschool.
Preschool, sorry.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
This preschool class on her own, and she created the school, so I don't know what they charged, but you had to pay to go to it.
Okay.
She used to work, she ran the Chamber of Commerce, had a little desk in the hotel, and she would, she worked there. And then she started working for the newspapers. I guess it was just the Review Journal. But they were,
was that the Boulder anyway, City Review Journal? What was the name of the newspaper?
No, the Las Vegas Review Journal.
Oh.
They had a Boulder City page, and so she was in charge of the Boulder City page, and I remember there was a bus that would come in every afternoon, and we had to take, she would type up the story and then usually attach a photograph my father had taken.
Oh, cool.
And put it in an envelope, and we would have to take it to the bus station to be taken to Las Vegas. And I'm not sure how they hooked up with the Review Journal, but they would get the Review Journal, and then it would be in the, I don't know if it was in the paper the next day, I think every Thursday they had a Boulder City page or something.
Oh, okay. So once a week story, I was going to say everyday story, that's really, really hard. But 52 stories a year, that's a little more within the scope of reason here.
Yeah. So I think that's what it was. I stretched my memory in. But I just remember rushing to the bus station to get to catch the bus, because if you missed the bus, then you missed the story.
Huh. Wow. And there would be just
and
no...
Because of that, you know, I was in the newspaper when I was a kid. All the time, because my father, you know, my father would take a picture of something, and I would have to be there. And so, my sister probably was too. I don't remember her being, but I just remember getting a lot of felicity.
Okay. Did you like swimming? Did you like water?
Yeah. We grew up, you know, loving water, and we both, my sister and I. My sister was much better at it than I was, but we were both, competitive swimmers.
Ah.
But back then, you know, if you knew how to swim in Nevada, you were a competitive swimmer because there weren't very many people that knew how to swim or swimming pools.
Right. You know, most of the desert out there, it's hard to learn how to swim in a cattle tank. And
So anyway, we ended up, you know, there were competitive meets or competitive teams in Las Vegas, in Clark County, and they were competitive in Washoe County. And then there would be a state championship that would rotate from year to year from either Reno or Las Vegas.
Wow.
And my sister used to win like 3 awards every year.
Wow.
But I just remember the big one was for me, because it's all about me. But I think it was, I was either just turned 11 or just turned 12. But anyway, I won the 50-yard breaststroke in Reno. Which is my claim to fame.
Wow. So that would have been state.
Yeah, it was a state. But again, that time, you know, it's really basically Reno and Las Vegas.
Okay. And when did you learn to water ski?
As soon as they had water skis, you know, I was probably 6 or 7.
Wow.
And that was, again, that was one of the things where just naturally just taking off. We had these huge, big boards. You start out with double skis, obviously. And then, when they went to single ski, it wasn't like, doesn't take a lot. But there we go again. So sometime when I was 11 or 12, they had I think it was probably the first official water ski race. And they had it by age group. And, so Buzz had one of the jet boats. It's one of the boats that had gone up the Grand Canyon, but it was one about that, like that.
Well, hang on a second. Let's regroup a minute, and have not introduced Bill. Is it Bill Belknap the third? Is that Buzz?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, and so Bill Belknap, the photographer that you've talked about, who was married to Fran, had 2 children. Loey and Bill Belknap the third, and Bill Belknap the third's nickname was Buzz.
Right. And that was named after Buzz Holmgren or
Holmstrom.
Very famous river guide or river runner.
And so Buzzy's father, Bill, when he was young, happened to be at the lake when Buzz Holmstrom did his solo trip through Grand Canyon and got some pictures of him. And I hadn't appreciated that he must have been inspired enough by Holmstrom to name his son Buzz. Huh. Let's not diverge over there just now, but the jet boat uprun was in 1960. You would have been 12. At the end of the run, the boat called the Dock was given to Bill Belknap. Buzz was on that trip as well, and Buzz was driving the Dock as a pilot. And at the end of the trip, they were given that boat to give to Chuck Ritchie, the superintendent of Lake Mead, at their leisure. So the boat didn't go right away to Lake Mead National Recreation Area. It eventually did, but that makes perfect sense that when you were 11 or 12, going in your first ski race, that Buzzy would have been driving the Dock.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that, because it was actually, you know, in pretty good shape.
Yep. And Buzzy, he didn't, you know, all these other boats were being bashed by the drivers. Buzzy was the best of the bunch as far as driving that boat was concerned, and the boat was in great shape.
That could be, because it looks, I have a picture with, I don't know if you've seen that, where I'm, you know, after we won the race, we're standing, Buzz and Loey and I are sitting on the edge of the boat, at the front of the boat. Let's see if I can find it. But the funny thing about that, and just going down the river in 63 is at the time, it just seemed like so normal. Now you think back, oh my God.
No kidding. I'm like, wait a minute, what? You did that? So, how much did you weigh when in 1960 as a 12-year-old?
I hopefully more than 100 pounds, but the pictures I have, I was pretty hard body. I mean, whatever it was pretty muscly.
Okay, and tell me about this ski race. How far did you have to race?
You know, honestly, I don't know the distance, but there was like two laps, and probably a mile or 2 miles a lap.
Wow.
But anyway, so going back to the story, so this, the Bueller jet boat would go like 45 miles tops, which that time was seemed like fast, but all these, we had, they used to call them Mandelas. I don't know what they've termed us now, but these were just super speed boats, and they had these V8 engines, and they made a ton of noise, and we had this little jet boat. So these boats could go way faster than we could go, but you know, it was like 11 or 12 years old, so the kids they were towing couldn't handle the high speeds.
Oh,
so
wow.
So we're going around the lap, and we're at first place. I'm way out in front, and I fall.
Ooh.
And so... it's one of those typical things where it's a buzz zips the boat around and hooks me up, and I get starts pull me out, and the other little kids are catching up, and just as I'm coming out of the water, I come out of the water just before they catch up, and we go off, and we still win the race.
Wow. So it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't speed. The other boats could go faster, but if you fell off, that makes me think. There's a limit, a speed limit, that skiing, where the returns start being overcome by the losses in falls.
Yeah, or I just think, you know, for better or worse, I think I was at the top of the age bracket, and these, but you know, I was by far the best skier, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Because I could, we were limited by the speed of the boat, whereas the other boats were limited by the speed of the kid.
Right. Huh. And I'm assuming you guys, you know, would practice that. Practice meaning, you know, just gone out and water skied for fun mile after mile after mile.
Yeah, I mean, we never practiced. We just, you know, this is what we did.
Right.
You know, we all just loved to ski.
Hmm. Okay. So you swam. Did you swim in high school? As a competitive sport?
No. In fact, I think after I won that thing, whenever it was, I probably didn't ski that much again.
Why not?
But, because I was, you know, into football and basketball and track. So.
Got it. Okay. Did you letter in high school in those things?
Oh, yeah. I was a world champion football player.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was the number one football player in the state.
Really?
In Boulder City, you know, so schools of our size, which I forget, I think it was double A, but there.
Okay.
I played college
football. Now, it's interesting because your dad was on a football scholarship.
Right.
Did he encourage you? Did he fuel that fire?
I think it's just one of those things where you grow up in a little town like that, I mean, football was the big sport, and so you start young, and if you're good at it, you stick with it.
Okay.
So never a question. But here's the tragedy. So we're 1963. We're going down the river. We get to Phantom Ranch, and we thought it was going to take 10 days for the whole trip. It was 10 days to Phantom Ranch, so look, another 20 days. My sister had to go somewhere. My dad, I'm not sure what he wanted to leave. He wanted to leave, or he was happy to leave. And I said that I wanted to get back for football practice.
Hmm.
So that's when we all came out of Phantom Ranch and missed the really famous second 20 days.
You know what? We've been talking about 45 minutes here, And I'm going to want to know that story from start to finish. So I'm going to hold off on going to 1963 just yet. But I am going to kind of spend a little more time with your high school days there in Boulder City before we get to 1963. So in 1960, the was the jet boat run. And Buzzy was older than you.
Yeah, he's my sister's age. He's 4 years older.
Okay. All right. Got it. Let's back up a second. How did you get the nickname Tick?
All right. Well, this is the real question. And because everybody wants to hear something interesting, and it's never been totally explained to my satisfaction, but apparently when I was a baby, I'm not sure how this was when I was breastfeeding or when this was, but I would hiccup when I was being fed.
Okay.
And so my sister called me Hickey. And somehow that transmogrified into Ticky. And you know, whatever reason, it stuck. So when I was growing up in Boulder City, I was Ticky until I graduated. And I go back there, I'm still Ticky.
Oh, wow. Huh.
At some point, I guess probably my parents, I'm not sure, but anyway, so I realized that's probably just in a shortened, so it became Tick officially. But,
So is that on your driver's license, or is that just Richard Sigerman?
No, officially. I'm still Richard on the driver's license.
But when you see old timers in town that know you or that went to school with you, they're like, hey, Tick, how are you?
Yeah, I'm Ticky.
Okay, Ticky.
But officially, I mean, not officially, but to everybody else, I'm Tick. And when I run on the ballot, they have Tick in quotes, Sagerwood.
Okay. Cool. Well, that's fun. 1960 was the jet boat year. And by then, Bill Belknap had become really good friends with a fellow from California who was interested in all things river and river running named Otis Marston. Marston's nickname was Doc, D-O-C-K. What are your first recollections of Doc Marston?
I don't even sure I knew him, but my recollections are really just based on the trip.
Okay, so you didn't actually have any interface with him. And again, he would have been interfacing with your mom and dad, and with Buzzy's mom and dad, and the kids would have been the kids.
And it could well have been that. I'm sure I met him, but I don't recall ever talking to him or hearing any stories or even appreciating. Famous he was before that trip.
His children and grandchildren said he was certainly not Mr. Giggles. He wasn't, Dick Van Dyke. He wasn't going to take you to the park and push a swing for you.
But, you know, later on, when I went to college, his granddaughter was at, I think, Scripps. I went to what's called the Claremont Colleges.
Yes.
And there's like four colleges there, and she was at I think my age, and in one of the other colleges. So I actually got to know her a little bit at college. Small world.
Cool. Huh.
Okay. And then I had a trip with Garth, his son, and it's the son's son.
And Jeff, Garth's son, maybe Jeff, he's got a number of sons there, does Garth?
I can't remember what's about the son. I remember Garth.
Okay.
Well.
Okay. We'll get to that. When was that trip with Garth?
It was when I was doing the green, so probably in around 1970. Could have been later, but I think probably 70 or 71. Or 72.
Okay. All right. Let's see. 1960, we talked a little bit about Buzz and Bill Belknap coming back to Boulder City with a jet boat, with a Bueller jet boat, or a Bueller, I guess it was. Pronounce that different ways from different folks. What do you remember about that jet boat run, the down run, up run? Do you remember anything about it? I mean, it would have been kind of happening there in the background hum of Boulder City.
Yeah, just that, you know, it was quite a production, and I think it was tied to Walt Disney or something, or they were filming something, or maybe I'm wrong, but so they were somehow involved in it. But it was just, you know, it was something that the Belknaps were very involved in, and it was successful. And then it was really the jet boats that made it happen, which I think I may have met some, I'm sure I met some people from Indiana where they made the jet machine.
Mm-hmm.
But also I probably met some people from New Zealand, but I'm not. But again, it wasn't like on top of my radar.
Right, you're right to remind me to back up even further in the timeline to 1959, with the Walt Disney filming of the movie Ten Who Dared. And that would have been staged. There would have been a lot of transport from Boulder City up to Lee's Ferry and back. The trip ended there in Boulder City. And so that was right. Those two river trips were, you know, a year apart. So it's not.
Yeah, and again, maybe that's what it was, but it seemed like they were somehow related. But mm-hmm. Did they use jet boats on that movie?
They wanted to. Very much Doc wanted to try to make that happen, but the boats were still going in the prototype stage, and Bueller realized that they needed to go back to the drawing board and did that and started mass producing them in the fall of 59. And so they missed out being used as prop boats for John Wesley Powell in 1869. The little replica boats actually had, you know, these twin outboard Evinrudes in the back. But they would have been jet boats otherwise. I'm like, how would that have worked? But no, that didn't happen in 59.
I remember the Disney thing, you know, but I wasn't involved in it.
Right. What else do you remember about sort of growing up high school in Boulder City there?
Again, just very small. You knew everybody. Everybody knew you.
Did you guys lock your doors? Did you lock your cars? Was it the sort of place where you didn't bother with that?
No, you didn't do any of that stuff.
Okay.
And very white. And just, you know, I mean, truthfully, by the time I got out of there, I was ready to get out of there.
Okay. So no Hispanics, no African Americans, no indigenous people?
No, not openly. There's one African American family.
Wow.
And to their credit, they stuck it out, but it was they were really subjected to some bad things.
I bet.
And Hispanics, we actually had some, but you didn't think of them. I mean, they just seemed normal. It wasn't something where you thought of them as anybody other than the rest of us.
Huh. Okay. And in I think you mentioned this. You were number one in the state in AA. Was that the team? Was that the Boulder City football team?
Yeah, we won the state championship. But they also there's this after the season they put together a list of like the top players from around the state, and I was on that.
Sort of an all-star team.
Yeah, and I set a rushing record. As far as how many total number of yards in a year and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay. Were you thinking was college the sort of thing your mom and dad said when you're going to college, Tiki, you're going to do blah blah, or did they never even mention it? How did that work out?
No, it was just assumed you go to college, but it wasn't. You know, I was recruited by some places But I never really pursued that. So I went to the college my sister had gone to, and I knew I could play football there, but I really wasn't.
Hmm. Did Robin go to Claremont?
Pomona, yeah.
Pomona, okay. And as you were a senior in high school, what were you thinking you wanted to go to college in?
I honestly didn't even think about it. I was just trying to get out of town and trying to survive. So.
Okay. All right. Maybe this is a good place to put a comma in this interview series, because next time I'll want to know about the 1963 Grand Canyon River trip. And we'll start with that, and then we'll head out of there and head off to college, if that sounds like a good idea to you.
Sure, whatever.
Okay.
Let's go on the chart.
Sorry?
I forget that we were going to do this. I honestly, I ideally could leave around another half hour.
Okay. I'm gonna wrap this up now, though, because I'm kind of stuck in some other things that are going on.
Oh. Okay.
And this is a I think good place to stop here. In the material we've talked about, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you were thinking, oh, he should have asked me about so and so because there's a nice story there?
No, I can't think of anything. But let me also just real quick here, if I can find it. But I just did a political campaign, and one of the things I put together was a biographical piece.
Oh, cool.
And so if I can find it, I'm going to email that to you, because it has a lot of these pictures, and you know, it glosses over the bad parts of my life, but it makes me look
super. Pretty. Well, that'll be fun. Well, you know what? Let's go ahead then and conclude this oral history. I'll turn the machine off. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2023. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history with Tick Sagerblum. And my name is Tom Martin. And Tick, thank you so very, very much.
All right. Thank you.